You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hi, I'm Elena. I just had a conversation with Mark Sager, co-founder and CEO of Auckland-based company Soul Machines, about their digital twins, which are AI-powered avatars that can replicate a person. This pioneering company aims to use these avatars for human empowerment and have applied the technology into areas such as healthcare and education. Mark talked to me about how the technology works, their recent projects, and what the ethical questions and procedures are in regard to their recent decision to bar politicians and certain industry groups from using the technology.
I was just wondering whether, like, first you could explain what the digital twin technology is and its digital people.
Yeah, so Soul Machines basically creates sort of embodied artificial intelligence. So it's basically putting a human face and embodiment on AI technology, and we develop our own AI technology, which is based on simulating human cognition and emotion. But we can also use our digital humans to connect to a third-party AI technology. Now, as part of this, we can either make digital people that look realistic, but they're people that don't exist, so they can be, and you can build them to match whatever sort of demographic that you want to go after or so forth. But we also do a thing called digital twin technology, where we create very detailed models of, in most cases, it'd be like a celebrity and or a specific person. Now, in that, we basically scan that person and then build effectively a 3D model of them, which can then be animated by digital brain technology, and you can then have that digital twin represent whatever your organization is. So we did a digital twin of Will.i.am, the musician.
I saw that
a couple of years ago, yeah. And so that's an example of a digital twin, and what he wanted it for was to be able to reach, you know, his fans at scale, but also it can be used as a channel for philanthropy and all kinds of things. We're doing a few projects at the moment, and some of them are exploring things like mental health. There's a famous musician that we're about to start a project on, and then there's some other sports celebrities. So it depends who the person is and what their legacy is. There's even a very famous poet in the mix at the moment.
Apart from replicating how a celebrity looks like, how would you actually get it to behave like the person? Like, is it possible to really make a digital twin respond in the same way that a celebrity would?
The thing is, you're creating a very curated experience, because the celebrity or the person being made a digital twin of, their public image is very important to them. And so you're creating more of a curated experience. For those things, it's much less about machine learning, which is producing effectively a generated statistical answer, which you're not 100% sure of what it's going to say, and it's more of a curated thing. It's a structured way of interaction to achieve a particular result. You know, if it's informing people, you can have lots of free-form content, like if they're an information source or they're pointing you in different directions. But in general, if you're capturing that person's personality, then their key mannerisms, which are, you know, very idiosyncratic, are ones where you're kind of regenerating those things. You can look at transcripts of what people have said in interviews. You can do all kinds of things, but in general, you have to be very careful with what's being done there, because you don't want to get it wrong.
You don't want to misrepresent.
Misrepresent, exactly.
I find interesting that you say curation, because in a way you could think of it as exactly the same as what you do on social media, curating a very specific kind of profile. There's been a lot of concerns of how social media has developed so rapidly and in such an uncontrolled way over the last few years, and now resulting in echo chambers and spread of misinformation. AI is a similarly emerging field that could potentially be super revolutionary. How would you limit the same issues that have arisen maybe with social media? And I read that politicians in certain industries, such as tobacco or arms industries, might be barred from using this kind of technology. How will that be controlled?
Yeah, as a company, we deliberately avoid politics, weapons industries, and so forth. So we're really focused on industries which don't have a perceived negative social connotation. And so we're more of a platform platform type company, that means that the technology can be used. But if people produce objectionable content, in our contracts, we basically have the right to take that down. Our purpose is pushing the use of AI for good, human empowerment, social good, information purposes, things like that. So we're really sort of going down that route. Ultimately, if the technology is going to be successful, then it has to be trusted. To build trust, you have to get a lot of things right, and you have to be very consistent. Things like data sharing, and we don't share the data of individuals unless they would consent to that. If you go far into the future, these digital humans will be accepted by society if they are trustable. We also are trying not to fool people, so we're deliberately not making the technology, you know, super realistic so that you don't know whether you're talking to a real person or not.
So what actually is the end goal of this? Obviously, maybe in the future, like, it can be used in education and that kind of thing.
So we actually are doing a collaboration with Annette Henderson in the Early Learning Lab at the university. So
she's
a developmental psychologist. And so what we're doing there is we're actually studying interactions of caregivers with infants. And we are looking at all the strategies being used to cooperate and to emotionally co-regulate to do different tasks. And so we want to use the same types of cues that people naturally do, that social learning, we're learning cues all the time. We want to be able to see how we can enhance cooperation between humans and machines with that as well.
If politicians and those involved in certain industries are banned from using this technology, how would Soul Machines determine who comes under this umbrella?
So we have an ethics policy that we publish on our website. Mm-hmm. We have an ethics committee that meets a few times a year, and these are the types of things which can come up. So at the moment, there's nothing controversial, but if in the future something came up, mm-hmm. then we would have to make a decision on that, because sometimes it's grey areas, sometimes it's really clear. Ultimately, it's a case-by-case basis.
If this tool is a way for celebrities to connect with their fans, what if they're wanting to connect in like a political way? Will they be able to do that, or will their digital twin have to be a bit more apolitical than they might like?
That's a really good question. So we haven't come up against any situation like that. One of the things is that we embrace diversity and so forth in the digital humans that we create. There's a spectrum of things which can happen. Again, it's on a case-by-case basis. For example, if content is raised which is objectionable, we have the right to take that down. Now, who determines?
Yeah, who determines objectionable?
Well, society normally, you know. It's a complicated thing, because what's objectionable to one group isn't to another. But I think in anything which is involving hate speech or bias, those are things which, in a way, you can, without being aligned in any way, you can make pretty clear calls on. Anything which increases tolerance are the way to go with this type of technology.
We've just been through a pandemic, and you said you're already looking at how the technology can be used in healthcare and in this social setting where we can't really interact as much. What place does that have now? Like, where's the company looking to in the future?
Well, we did a project with the World Health Organization last year during the middle of the pandemic. With that, it was basically dispelling myths about COVID. So, you know, you could ask questions about COVID and you'd get great answers. And then it was also being used to help people quit smoking, because the combination of COVID plus smoking has disastrous consequences. Working with World Health Organization on that was a great application of the technology.
So you wouldn't just use videos of people in that instance, because you can actually interact with these humans, like you can ask a question, then they'll answer, instead of just an informative video.
Yeah, because if you think about any conversation, it's like you're kind of exploring the space of possibility. And so when you have a conversation, I don't know what you're going to say next, and that might lead you somewhere else. And you don't know what I'm going to say next, and that might lead you somewhere else. We co-navigate a path of information to find what it is that person wants to know. Mm. And so you may not know ahead of time what what you need. The technology effectively disambiguates.
Yeah, it's an interesting workaround that happens because it's less of a human approach in one sense because it's not a real person, but it almost amounts to a more human interaction because it's organic and it's not just watching a video of someone.
For things like education, active learning has been shown to be much more mm-hmm. powerful than passive learning. For example, we've done some prototype language teachings where you have to speak in a foreign language to the digital human, and because you're actually talking to somebody's face versus saying it aloud out of a guide, out of a phrase book or something, you know, you're actually having to deal with the cognitive load that comes with dealing with another person.
Well, yeah.
Because the point is when you actually interact with real people, you have a hell of a lot more to think about than when you're just, you know, studying by yourself or something. And so these are things where you're putting all the elements together and it increases retention, and it actually, you start walking the talk.
So that was Mark Sager from Soul Machines. Thank you, Mark.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.